listening to Trending with Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timmery holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
It's good to be back in studio with all of you again. Maybe you're listening while you're driving, getting ready for work, on your way home from work, whatever it might be. Thanks for being with us here on Trending. And also joining us today is from Everyday Catholic, Chris Mueller.
Well, hey, it's good to be back in the studio with you.
Thanks for being here. We have a lot lined up. The last episode, so you're here two shows this week. So if you didn't catch the last one, Chris and I were talking a lot about the issue of abortion contraception, specifically on women's lives, from the ideology of how they view their body moving forward from there. This week, we're talking more about men. So coming up and talking about men, I want to start today. We're going to be talking about an interview that was done with high school students in 1958. What does the future look like? We're going to be talking about maybe some of the views that they shared in common, what they were thinking about college and where they went from there with those ideas. We'll also be talking about this really creepy ad by an organization that is showing their support for Planned Parenthood by really making it clear the outright attitude toward abortion that they have. Basically, a child is wanted or unwanted. So stay tuned for that. Chris, this is really, I think, the headline of today's show that we're going to be touching on. What happens when women no longer want to get married and they're focused on their careers? This man ends up marrying, in Japan, a virtual reality singer, a hologram, and he sleeps with her stuffed animal person next to him on his bed. We'll talk about this, surrogacy and a surprising trend for 2018 in surrogacy. So stay tuned. But I want to start, Chris, by talking about this video, and I'll post a link to it. 1958, high school students were asked, you know, what are you thinking? Are you about your future? Are you going to go to college? They're about 18 years old, getting ready to go away. And just a couple of them planned on going to college. More of them were interested in going if the money was there, but many of them weren't interested in going to college as well. And some of the arguments for not going to college, just mention some of those.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You look at that age group, the young adults, 18-year-olds, and one of the things that I think as a church we need to really see is that Madison Avenue knows this. 18, 25-year-olds commit to a product. They buy that product for the rest of their lives. And so as a church, we need to step into it. You look at modern day, it's like thrown away years, right? Like 18 to 25 really are those, oh, go out, experiment, go try new things, go do, you know, your whatever. But back here, these kids, they were thinking like serious thoughts. And even if they weren't ready to say, I want this career, they had a real rational reason for saying they weren't ready to make that decision.
Right. They did. And it was interesting. They all had this common experience of, I want to provide. They were all sharing the ideology that marriage and family was the goal, even if they were looking at delaying it. There was a big push. It's just a 9-minute interview where some girl really sounds like she's, you know, maybe anti-settling down, but she's just saying, no, education's really important. It's so human-centered. And she starts to say things like, no one can take your education away from you. And it's interesting because people of basically the boomer generation, I hear say this all the time, especially the women, I have my education. No one can take it away from me.
Right.
But what's the purpose of that education? And many of these young men and women saw that the purpose was ultimately to provide, cultivate the ground, maybe even if you didn't go for an education, but maybe chose to be a farmer.
Right. And again, what was the cost of education in 1958 compared to what it is now? I mean, that they, no one can ever take that from you is great, but you weren't taking out a mortgage to get it. You know,
exactly.
And if you were, it was a much smaller mortgage, right? And so now we're talking, what, you know, $150,000 to $200,000 for a 4-year education just so I can have it so no one can take it away from me. Well, that's hard, right? That's, you know. It's difficult.
You know, millennials, I think, have fallen for that. But it's interesting because you and I talked a while back about Gen Z and how they're a little more practical. Gen Z, they actually grew up during the 2008 recession and they saw the struggle of their families, very similar to this boomer generation of 1958. They saw some of those challenges. And so they're saying, no, we are family oriented. We might have to choose between a career and a family. And they even say things like, we would never want to not raise our own children or leave our children. But we recognize basically the situation of today that we don't recognize that we sometimes, especially as women, have to choose between career and raising our own children.
Right. They saw it as a binary choice, right? You either had a career or you had a family, because there was no concept that you would try to do both. And I talk to people all over the country where they're just, if I talk to parents, the one common thing is everybody feels overwhelmed. And it's true. And we have all these devices that are supposed to make our life easier, supposed to help us multitask and do all, everything can happen. But you can't.
You're talking to two people who are horrible multitaskers. You see it all the time,
yeah.
Too.
Human beings are horrible multitaskers. the term was invented for use on computers and then applied to human beings, right?
You mean I'm not a computer?
No, you're not, right?
You mean I can't marry a computer I created?
Oh, my sweet Lord. Yeah.
Coming
but
up.
But again, I do say this, like, your kids are a full-time job. I mean, they are. My kids are a full-time job, and my wife is the one who is doing that full-time. And I'm always concerned about them. But I have a different role in the family, right? We have, and there's a division of labor to make sure that the most important aspects don't get missed, right? So our kids don't slip through the cracks. Why? Because there aren't cracks to slip through.
Come on, people would say you have six kids. One of them has to slip through.
Okay, one of them falls on his head more often than the others. I will say that. Yeah. But that's
not the baby.
That's nature. That's nature versus nurture. He's just super. That kid is who he is.
Oh, just imagine the person turning the dial. They're going, what are they saying right now?
No, anybody who's got like four kids and up knows that kids are all different. They come out of the womb different. And some of them are very cautious and some of them make you worry. And that's just this. We actually, at one point when he was little, put helmets, like every day wear helmets in our Amazon shopping cart and contemplated it. Because it's just, we thought he's not going to make it. Like, unless we get this kid a helmet, there's nothing we're going to. Yeah. So anyway.
And here I was, the one ditching the helmet when I was driving my little bikes when I was in high school. Yeah. One interesting piece, that's Chris Mueller. I'm Timory Millington. You're listening to Trending. You can learn more at radiotrending.com. These young high school students from 1958 looking to their future, discussing college, one of the things that I found really interesting is all of them saw the importance of having a purpose. Although they might not know what it was yet, only being 18, they kept emphasizing, you know, half of them, I'm only 18, or how are you ready? But they did emphasize the importance, no matter what, of they thought that maybe they weren't ready because they knew what a strong responsibility they had, not just for themselves, but their future families and one another.
Yeah, there was no sense of, well, I'm just going to take a couple years and you know, backpack through Europe. Right. There was no like, oh, I need to take a gap year. It was, you know, one of the young men said something to the effect of, well, I didn't do very well in school. It's not my thing. I'm going to go join the military.
Two of them said that,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah. I mean, it was. But the idea was, this is a noble thing to do. This is a way I can contribute.
I can contribute to society. One interesting thing I'd like to know is that today young people are a little different. So we could point to differences between Gen Y and Gen Z, right? But overall, I would kind of say some things that we see is that people today really desire fame, many ways, and fortune. Now, I think that people before, in some ways, yes, loved that, but they were a little more grounded in responsibility and duty.
Well, absolutely. It's to say that this generation is narcissistic is to understate, right? I mean, Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, we're taking pictures. We are the most documented generation ever, right? And it's not that historians won't be able to find sources from this time period. The problem will be sifting through the mountains of sources to find the important stuff, because there's just so much, you know. And what was this? The guy in Europe who asked for all of his Google data, right? That started the whole the privacy stuff in Europe. He got over like 1,000 to 3,000 pages of data that Google had collected on him, right? So yeah, we are absolutely focused on self. We're absolutely focused on yeah, fame. We all want to be that overnight sensation, that internet, that YouTube star, the Kardashian, God forbid. Like, that seems to be so true. And I think that's why we see, you know, depression spike amongst adolescents, is they're measuring themselves up against these people, and it just seems so easy. And why is my life hard? Because life is hard. Life does have challenges.
Well, and they're measuring themselves up in a way that they're looking and going, well, my success is based on my own personal fame, my own likes and comments on social media, because they're getting that little dopamine kick and they feel good when that photo goes a little viral.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're being manipulated.
Absolutely.
You know? And the lessons are forgotten. You know, we're forgetting the lesson of, gosh, you know, it feels good. It feels better to wake up early and clean the kitchen so that when your mom comes down or your spouse comes down, you see the smile on their face, mm-hmm. or just the sense of relief. Like, let mm-hmm. that be your dopamine hit. And it's going to contribute. It's going to give you a lot more.
I advocate it for all the time. I'm chewing on my words today here. But the fact that being able to look up and away from our phone, for me, you know what it took? It took really taking that black and white challenge of my phone for over a year now has been only on black and white. And I can't tell you how many friends and family members are starting to do this. And I'm getting emails from you listening saying, hey, I put my phone in black and white and this is really different. I'm able to disconnect a little easier. I'm able to be a little more logical with how I step away. And I'm also able to see, like, hey, this is kind of dissatisfying in comparison to all the notifications and color I had before.
Well, it's totally true. I've done is on my Covenant Eyes, my web content filter we have for our family, I just set mine to, I think, young teen. So I can't access Facebook or Twitter without permissions, right? And it sounds silly. I've got the password, but it's just a stop. Like, if I go on my computer to go to it or my phone to go to it, it's a stop. And I have to go, okay, why? And you have to make a deliberate choice. Mm-hmm. But I love the new parental controls on iOS 12.
Yes, for the iPhone.
Oh,
we're
absolutely.
Talking about
those. Yeah, FaceTime and downtime. And boy, parents, you really got to get into that. That is it's a game changer.
So if you didn't listen to the episode a couple weeks ago, you can actually lock down your kid's phone with time frames where they can't use certain things, completely shutting it down.
Oh, yeah.
Text messaging, you name it. There are some applications that do this on Android phones, but not to this extent. And there's also an age limit, apparently.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I just went through and rewrote our Parenting in the Internet Age workshop just so I can teach parents this. We just finished an ebook to get it out because it's so valuable. You know, we have so many good reasons to want our kids to have all this stuff, but then make sure the device does those things and not the things you don't want it to do, right? Because again, all of this emphasis, you look at young people 1958 to young people now, young people 1958 were looking forward. They're looking outside. They're looking at family. They're looking at what I contribute. They weren't looking just at, you know, I want it now. I want to feel good. I want to measure up against some unrealistic standard.
That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timmery Millington. I want to talk to you guys about this ad I saw, or little video that Obi Anuju from Africa posted on social media. An organization, it's a liberal think tank against Project Action Fund, which supports Planned Parenthood. And they showed this video. Chris, do you want to describe the video?
Oh, it is the most beautiful little baby.
I mean, she's adorable.
Just, oh my gosh. Yeah. And I wonder if that was just stock footage, you know, but it's just this gorgeous little baby. They show the baby and then they give a line. And what was that? I can't remember what the first line was.
It says, she deserves to be loved. She deserves
true.
To be wanted.
Absolutely.
She deserves to be a choice.
That was so weird.
I wasn't expecting it.
Yeah.
I'm going, yes, she does. She does. She's adorable. And then all of a sudden it says she deserves to be a choice. And then it's a play on words. Who does? She deserves to be chosen to be alive would be the positive spin. But what they're saying is she deserves to be a choice that if I want to kill her, I should be able to, because we should only create her. But in fact, she's already created. We should only bring her into the world.
Yeah, let's just look at basic causality. Yeah. She was a choice. Someone made a choice. There was a choice made. I mean, that again, it's crazy. People, that act makes babies. Like, it does. You're making a choice. Like, it's basic biology. Like, the choice has been made. It's insane.
This video is incredibly shocking, but this is where people are at. And this is what's interesting to me. The fact that an organization, specifically a think tank, they were cunning enough to show a video.
Think tank. That's a whatever.
Yeah. But a think tank that's, okay, we're going to research this. We're going to decide to produce a short video, right length, with a cute, adorable baby that everyone's oohing and aahing over. It draws emotion. The music that it's set to is meant to have an emotional connection with that child. Yes, she deserves to be loved. Yes, she deserves to be wanted. Yes, she deserves to be chosen. What does that mean? Well, in today's world, many people are going to view this as, well, she's either wanted or unwanted. And if she's wanted, then she deserves to live, and that is true and right. But if she's unwanted, that's also true and right as well.
You know, I think it was Leah Darrow posted something like, this is what happens when Satan runs your marketing department. And I was like, this is what happens when Satan runs your entire business model for Planned Parenthood. But, you know, again, we've become so utilitarian in our view of human beings, right? This person has inherent value. That has nothing to do with the biological mother's desire to have a child. The child is a child, right? And whether you wanted to get pregnant at that point, you are pregnant. So let's deal with the reality rather than deny what is real. And again, if you're not in a position to raise a child, then put it up for adoption. I mean, the reality is that beautiful little baby right there would have been snatched up immediately by parents who are hungry and eager to raise and to have that child in their home.
You know, placing a child for adoption today, it's so much, it's looked on in a more positive light, I think. You know, some of the older generations have a difficult time with it, but I've been with people through that adoption process. I've been random people, you know, who basic daily needs, who knew I was pro-life and have faced crisis pregnancies in maybe their children's lives. And placing their child for adoption was a very difficult choice, but maybe they had an open adoption. Or maybe they knew that, you know, right now in my life, I need to not be in my child's life, you know, whatever it might be. But the fact that that is an option, but what it does is it says, you are worth so much. I'm willing to sacrifice my love for you and my desire to be with you, or my desire not to have you and be inconvenienced, to say you deserve a mother and a father. And Chris, I don't know if you've looked recently at any of that. It's kind of a weird thing to look at. You wouldn't. But an adoption like website, you can browse through hundreds upon hundreds of couples. They're eager faces waiting for years to adopt a child.
Yep. Yeah, it's absolutely true. I mean, those children are wanted. The lie is that, oh, well, that child wasn't wanted. No, that child, maybe the person who conceived the child wasn't ready to take care of a child, but that doesn't mean that child wasn't wanted. There's absolutely a couple out there that wants that child.
But you know, this is kind of a simple mindset to get into. This video is brilliant because it's being advertised on social media to young people who are going to see it, saying, you know, she deserves to be a choice. Well, I remember I grew up in a pro-life home, Chris. My parents even opened up a maternity home when I was a little girl. Like, I grew up in the pro-life movements, from politics to sidewalk counseling, you name it. One of my earliest memories was Father Frank Pavone doing an exorcism on an abortion clinic on one side of the street and a strip club on the other. Like, I grew up around the evil of abortion. However, I remember I was about 12 or 13 years old, even having volunteered, been around the movement with my parents, and thinking in my very simple mind, thinking, well, if a baby's unwanted, if a baby won't be loved, if basic needs aren't being met, this is how simple it was. Why can't a woman just not have her baby? And I thought, you know, I think I'm kind of okay with abortion. But when faced with what abortion actually was, I was able to see absolutely not. This is the destruction, the mutilation of a human being.
Right. It's not as easy as, well, I made a choice. Mm-hmm. No. I mean, you that was a person. And you look at a baby developing in the womb, it becomes undeniable. This is a human life, mm-hmm. right? This is a little person, fetus, little person. Yeah. That's what this is. It's not a choice. It's not so simple as, well, she just didn't want to have her baby. Right. That's not the way it works.
See, the greatest injustice to the unborn child is the fact that there's no window to the womb. You know, sonograms have made incredible impact on young people today being pro-life. But until we see what's actually happening, like Abby Johnson, for example, she worked in Planned Parenthood. She was Planned Parenthood's employee of the year back in like 2008 or 9. And she left within a year or two because she saw an ultrasound guided abortion where a doctor was performing an abortion. In order to do so, he was looking at a screen where that baby was being torn apart and was flinching away from the instruments.
Yeah.
This is what abortion is.
Absolutely.
What I want to talk about here, as we talk about this ideology, when we turn away from the 1958 view of responsibility, this is where we get to. We get to abortion, when we no longer view the other person as someone to be protected, respected, loved, cared for, and to see the burden, but also the great love and opportunity to be transformed by it. This is where we go next with men. I read this and I thought, this is too insane. I'm not going to cover it. We're not going to discuss this, but the reality is, Chris, I saw this headline. It's all over social media online. A Japanese man marries a virtual reality singer. She is a hologram.
Yeah, she's an anime hologram. It's not even like a person. It's a drawing. I wish I was surprised by this. A, you have the advent of online pornography. We see that young people are having a harder and harder time relating to each other because of social media and the text kind of relationship. And again, I can see how this could happen. I mean, I'm not justifying, but I wasn't surprised. It's ridiculous, but I wasn't, you know, sadly, it's not surprising. It's just, this is how far from reality we've gotten in our culture.
We live in a time.
In this culture.
Yeah, well, we live in a time where people are marrying their homemade robots, homemade computers, homemade, or a virtual reality singer. He says he realized he's been in love with her for 12 years.
It's crazy. There's a woman in the news not too long ago who claimed to marry a ghost, had a service. I mean, it's insane.
You know, you look at this, he even spent $17,000 for his marriage location where he got married. There in the 1980s in Japan, it was 1 in 50 men by the age of 50 weren't married. Today, it's 1 in 4 men by the age of 50 who are not married in Japan. And, you know, you have these ideologies being pushed of love and happiness and acceptance, and he can marry and do and love whatever he wants. But here's the creepy story. This guy's a school administrator.
I highlighted that too, yeah.
He's a school administrator, and he just married a 16-year-old holographic singer.
I think there's some red flags. I think we may have a problem.
I mean, in the area of post-Me Too sex abuse scandal in the church, you know, he's sitting here saying, but I'll never be cheated on by her. She'll never die. She'll never age. He sleeps with a big stuffed animal or person, whatever you want to call it, toy next to him in his bed.
You know, there was a time in human history where we'd have looked at that and said, you know, this guy needs help. We need to get him counseling. This guy needs, there are needs in this man's life that are not, he doesn't know how to relate to human beings. We need to give him help to get social skills so that he can have a quality of life that is good, right? We would say this guy has a sickness.
Yeah.
Not today. Now a corporation is going to issue him a marriage certificate.
Yeah. Yeah. The organization that creates, or supposedly the hologram organization. Here's where we have to ask, what is love? Things like, what is love? And, you know, is sex a part of marriage? Because today we live in a culture where, in the state of California, for example, male and female, husband and wife, has been taken out of all family law. Did you know that? So you're no longer married to your wife. You're married to your partner, to your spouse.
Wow.
Other states, you can still be married to a male or female or whatever that is. But family law here in California, that's not so. You're general, you're generalized, you're generic, you're replaceable also. And it makes us ask, well, what is love? He says he loves this holographic singer that's 16 with doughy eyes, and he's in his 30s. Kind of creepy, if you ask me. But we love our career. We love sex. We love things that are easy. We love things that are pleasurable. What is love?
Yeah, it ain't an anime hologram. I'll tell you that one right now. There's the idea of this thing will never require any giving of himself.
Yeah.
None. It's completely utilitarian. It's completely at his service. He controls it completely. And that's not love. I mean, that is a device that is you've put in your life to give you some artificial pleasure, but it ain't love.
Sounds like he was somewhat turned off by marriage when a woman he worked with caused him to have a nervous breakdown. And essentially, though, we get to the point where people will say, well, I don't want to be inconvenienced. I don't want to be uncomfortable. I want what feels good. But here's the reality. We look to the cross, and there we learn what love is. It's bloody, bruised, and beaten. But it's total life-giving, self-giving love. And that's what we're supposed to strive toward. We're constantly meant to be purifying what we think is love, what we're trying to show is love, to be better.
You know, that statement about he was made uncomfortable, he was uncomfortable around women, all of those things. You know, the reality is during adolescence, particularly early adolescence, we become hyper aware of all the social rules, all the social cues, who's cool, who's not cool. Everybody goes through that. And it used to be you had to deal with it to learn how to be comfortable. But the more you can withdraw into the virtual world, into your devices, into your you know, online games or whatever, the less you have to confront that. And so you end up an adult and you've never developed the social skills, how to make small talk, how to get over that feeling of being uncomfortable, how to find your way. And this is the end result of that.
Isn't it interesting? We tend to run away from what will make us stronger.
Absolutely.
We tend to be afraid of what will make us stronger. We'll come back in on that. That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timory Millington. You're listening to Trending. We'll be right back talking about a 2018 trend that is shocking.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Timory here. It's really interesting. We were just talking, if you weren't with us, go check it out online, about this Japanese man who married a virtual reality singer, a hologram. Sleeps with a stuffed animal next to him. Some really important questions and answers that were discussed there. But I ended talking about this. Chris Mueller of Everyday Catholic is with me. And Chris, I said that we tend to fear and run away from what grows us. You know, and we look at, for example, the cross. Most of the apostles weren't there when Jesus was being beaten. When he was in the garden, they fell asleep. When, you know, he's there dying on the cross, most of them are not there. It's because they're afraid of what will grow them, what is challenging.
Yeah, we run from pain. We run towards pleasure. You know, everybody knows what they should do, but they don't do it. Why? Mm-hmm. Because they associate too much pain with it, right? Whether that be working out, whether that be prayer, whether it be whatever. And you know, this poor Japanese guy marrying the holographic animated character. Why? Because he was running from the pain of rejection from real women, right? And so this is a perceived pleasure. The problem is when you postpone pain, whether that be the pain of sanctification or the pain of getting into health or the pain of getting into a healthy relationship, you're not going to get rid of it. You're just going to delay it. If you run from the pain of sanctification, guess what? A whole lot more pain coming later.
Well, as we're talking about this, Chris, I'm looking at a new trend. So here in 2018, because I think this really ties together, 2018, I'm looking back, what's come up, what's been new. And what's been new is that the surrogacy industry, now there's a whole lot wrong there from the fact that they're creating life outside of male-female sexual relations, so then downplaying the dignity of a human person's creation. They're storing frozen embryos, babies, that should be able to be created by parents and live. They're then aborting them when too many are developing in the womb and didn't die off. You know, there's so much here, but here's what's interesting. Men specifically are turning towards surrogacy more often. In their late 30s, early 40s, they're responsible, financially secure, and they're having a hard time finding women who are willing to settle down and have a family. And I think these women are running away from what will radically change, transform, and make them into better human beings. And men are saying, I want that. I want that responsibility. Yet we women are saying no.
Yeah, it's a very strange place that we find ourselves as a culture, that the idea that men would say, well, I can't find a wife, so I'm just going to create a baby, or women would do the same. We've taken away the concept that a mother and a father are important. But we've also taken away the idea that, yeah, I mean, I get it that maybe women aren't looking to get married in as great a number as they used to. I don't know that I 100% buy that, because I know a lot of young women who are looking to get married but just can't find decent young men too. So a part of me feels like, hey, if you're a 40-something year old guy and you can't find someone who's interested in dating and or marrying you, then you need to do some life work, because something's wrong. Right. There's something that's getting in the way of that. Because I and this is, again, it's all anecdotal. I know a lot of young women who are eager to get married, but haven't found good men.
And I would also argue a lot of men as well. I mean, a lot of men who are also listeners of our show who have wanted to marry, but have had a hard time finding a proper caliber of a woman to marry, to share a life with, to have similar ideologies. And so in the meantime, who struggles? children. The good news here is the fact that men are turning to surrogacy shows that men want to sacrifice for something. They want to live for something. They want to have families. The bad news is that they're going about it all wrong. They're immediately denying that child a right to their mother by signing a contract away that will say that mother will never be in your life. They're using a surrogate, which commonly, you guys, we have to remember that surrogates are often trafficked human beings from other countries or poor and vulnerable people looking to find some sort of financial gain, or they could be your normal average person. But the reality is that that's not so much the type of person that is a surrogate. It's someone who's looking for money.
I mean, you're buying a baby for $150,000. Let's not make it noble. I mean, that's what it is. Does that make sense?
Right.
If you said it that way, if your website says buy a baby, people would be up in arms. But you call it surrogacy. Say have the child you always wanted. Right? No. You're buying a human being. That's what you're doing.
Well, you know what's interesting? Did you know that actually across Europe, surrogacy, for the most part, is completely outlawed?
I did not know that.
And so much so to the fact that the feminists that we might disagree with, who are saying in favor of abortion contraception, actually speak out against surrogacy in Europe because they view it as human trafficking, the slavery of women. Yet here in the United States, we don't view that. We talk about surrogacy. We don't talk about the fact that it is aborting babies.
Oh, yeah.
Causing consumerism for children. And even consumerism for the women who are bearing the children.
Yeah, there's this story of this guy named Morgan who had his surrogacy journey. They always talk about it, and his journey to surrogacy. Anyway, but he finds a surrogate mother. They get the eggs. They implant them. It says that nine human beings result from that. But then his one son was born. Oh, so you killed the rest of your children is what you're saying. I mean, that's the reality of it, you know? And, you know, for all of those reasons, as Catholics, we don't talk about this enough. Like, I think there are a lot of Catholics who just enter into this kind of thing because they're desperate to have a child, but they don't actually know what the church teaches.
Yeah. And they're looking for happiness. And that's where we agree. I think everyone chooses a means because they think it will make them happy. But the fact is that the fact that we're destroying human life, the fact that we're taking advantage of other young, maybe vulnerable individuals, the fact that we truly are essentially selling people into sexual slavery by buying into this, it's all so horrific. Like, there's so many points of departure that we could travel down and talk about why this is damaging for the person who's purchasing the surrogate and the child, the person who is a surrogate, the child. And we're forgetting, like, at the heart of this is a baby who will never know their parent.
Well, yeah, and long-term outcomes all show that children do better in a two-parent household, male and female.
Right, with their biological mother and father as best.
Right, I mean, and so we know that that is the best situation. I don't think children, I mean, again, if you're in a situation where that's not your case, you make the best, you do the best in the situation you're in, but why would you don't choose that?
Yeah.
You know, no one chooses, so you know what, someday, this is what I'm going to do. And when, again, this is the guy says this is not nobody's plan A, but it's a great plan B. No, it really isn't, because no one has a right to a child. No one has a right to another human being.
Well, and here's a question. Where is your mindset? If he's sitting here saying, you know, my nieces and nephews, he's saying, you know, they weren't enough anymore. I needed my own baby. And, you know, this is what he wanted. And having desires and the desire to have a children is a good and noble thing. But that doesn't mean that we're going to have the correct attitude when we're then raising the child. That also might mean that we lived a contrary lifestyle for a very long period of time that led to this point where we are single Pringle, ready to mingle, right? But people aren't willing to be there with us. Maybe there's something wrong with you that you do not have a spouse and a child at this point in your life. Yet we're saying you can buy a baby. And we've seen examples of this actually here in the state of California and others where that person purchasing the surrogate child is actually a really creepy, nasty individual living in his mother's basement, as right. We talked about here on the show.
Right, yeah. And I think the other thing is surrogacy, anybody can walk in and say, I want a baby. If they can pay the fee, they get the baby. If you're a single person and you're looking to adopt, well, then there are certain things, certain checks that they're going through saying, are you a safe person to have this child, right? So there's a safeguard for the child. And there are follow-up, there are welfare checks, there's all that take place. But single people can adopt too. Like, and so say for whatever reason, you're a single person and you are not you're not someone who's incapable of raising a child. You have the economic means. You think, you know what? There are kids, adolescents who are in the foster program, and I could give them a home and love, and I could do the best for this kid in the worst situation. Well, that's noble, right? But saying I want to buy a baby, there's nothing noble about that.
Mm. Yeah. My heart breaks over this issue. We're getting into an area of bioethics that is so labored with, I think, the desire for what is good again, but also the ignorance to say, well, it's all relative. It doesn't matter. Whatever means works. But if we tie this back, it really brings us back, and you mentioned this at the beginning, Chris, dating and how maybe you're single. And you're struggling to find a spouse. You really want to start a family. Are you meeting women or men of your age daily? You know, are you interacting with people who could be potential suitors? This is where I think online dating doesn't have to be online dating. Maybe if we thought about it more as online introduction, get to know a person, even the online social media apps, meet a person, yes or no, take off, you know, get to fuel whether or not we're interested in someone.
Well, and if you keep meeting person after person who says, well, you know, they're kind of a weirdo, then it's time to go get a little counseling and say, why this keeps happening? Why does this keep happening? And I've heard a lot of good Catholic faithful people say, well, it's just my faith. No, I'm not sure that they're rejecting Jesus. I think sometimes there's some people who maybe need to work on some life skills. That's a reality. And that sounds harsh. You're such a child. No, I want people to be happy, healthy, successful. You know, I want them to be successful in those areas of life as they are in their faith life. And so if you keep running into this over and over again, then maybe it's time to stop and say, well, gosh, is there something I'm doing? And it's probably something that you can fix. Go talk to a professional who can help you.
Absolutely. And I think when we start dating, it's important to emphasize, like, hey, I'm interested in settling down, because then that answers the question of whether or not the other person is. I saw a video a couple months ago, and it was a guy doing interviews down in Hollywood, and he's asking two young people what they think about marriage. And this young girl is sharing her ideologies about being very anti-marriage, and her boyfriend standing at her shoulder with this shocked face as she's saying, yeah, I don't want to get married. And he's sitting here like dedicating his life to dating her. And he just learned on national television, essentially, that she never wants to marry him. There's a problem when we get to that point. But there's hope on the other side of where we're seeing growth in the church and growth in young families and just joy in the liturgy. So stay tuned. That's Chris Mueller and I'm Timory Millington.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's TIMMERIE. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
Thanks for being with us, friends. I have Chris Mueller from Everyday Catholic in studio with me today. And I want to talk about some really great news. But before I do that, I want to shout out to y'all. I just put one of those Friday introductions up this past week on Instagram. So go and check it out, or you can find it at my blog, timory.com, talking a little bit about my background, what we're doing. You can find some fun pictures on there as well. So this week, an article came out that really hit close to home for me. So I'll share this little story. So beginning of this year, back in January, my now fiance decided he would love to start going to Latin Mass. Now, I grew up with, some close family members or individuals who loved Latin Mass. And, you know, we had kind of tried it out a couple times as a family. And I remember especially my mom and I were like, this is way too much kneeling. It's so long. I'll pass. So you can imagine I was somewhat reluctant when we started going to Sunday Masses, Latin Mass. And at first I'm sitting here, Chris, clinging on to the fact that at least I can go to, you know, regular Mass during the week in English. But I was astounded by what happened in my own attitude toward the traditional Latin Mass. Right away, I started to see that the music was something that truly elevated the experience of being at Mass. I walked in and saw that people were so incredibly respectful during Mass, and that they were all praying and focused in a similar way. And I don't see that reverence, unfortunately, often in many of our churches. It's kind of this attitude of, I worship my way, you worship your way. And it was tough to see this total respect and even reverence for the Eucharist that unfortunately is missing a lot of the time. And Grant, I love attending Mass in English. I go, it's beautiful. But what I grew to find very interesting was this deep respect.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. And again, you're going to find a particular type of person at the Latin, the Tridentine Mass, right? Like, I think because of that, so you talk about the level of devotion that you'll see there. Yeah, you have a particularly devoted subset that's attending, right? Mm-hmm. So what's the causality? Is it that's Latin or Tridentine, or is it because it's the particular type of person that's being drawn to it? Whereas the guy who goes every other week with his family, sometimes he's not going to go there because he's not going to go out of his way to find it, right? So you at your local parish on any given Sunday, you are going to have a lot more variety as far as the faith and the commitment level, I think, that you're going to see. Sure.
And the traditional Latin Mass is challenging because I know bits and pieces of Latin, but I don't know Latin. And so for me, I'm having to be totally engaged in watching what Father's doing, thinking about what he's doing, and then following along in the prayer book, reading exactly what's happening the whole time. And a lot of it's on my knees. And that's hard. But what happens is I feel like almost the world stops for a second because I'm forced to stop and look at God in a way that forces me to focus on him, that I find is much easier now in the traditional Latin Tridentine Mass.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting thing to see the resurgence. And it was 2007 when Benedict XVI, I guess, gave a wide permission for the Tridentine Mass to be celebrated again.
Right, and he encouraged and he started asking us, like, know your prayer, basic prayers, Our Father, the Hail Mary, the Glory Be in the Latin, because this is the universal Mass of the Church. So when there are large gatherings, we should be celebrating it in Latin.
Right. Yeah, the language is absolutely the language that we still propagate documents in. Absolutely. Yeah, it is an interesting thing. I think it's interesting to, if you look at the history of liturgy in the Catholic Church, that it really is from Trent forward that you have one liturgy for the entire Roman Church. Mm-hmm. Prior to Trent, you would have different liturgies in different dioceses and different regions and different things. And so there is this moment at Trent, and again, this is in response to the Reformation and abuses that have been happening. The Church says, no, this is the way we're doing it everywhere. We're doing it this way. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting look to see now, and then to see from Vatican II on, the Church kind of goes back to the idea that, well, we'll see what happens when the Mass becomes enculturated in different areas and how that affects the life of the Church. And to see that response is interesting in the West, for sure.
Absolutely. Well, and we have to remember, too, that although Trent did change a number of things, you have the Lebanese, Maronite Catholics, right? The Syriac, the Greek Catholics, so many of them that have preserved their same original Mass, which actually looks a lot like, yes, the Mass today, but also the Tridentine Mass. And I think that also in a lot of those cultures, they do have a deeper respect for the Eucharist, for the Blessed Virgin Mary, for really focusing, why are we here? And yes, it can become cultural, but focusing in on that prayer. I want Chris to talk about this. Why we're discussing this is that the Fraternity of St. Peter has seen a major uptake in not only the number of priests in their order, but also in the number of parishes. In their overall, their vocations, they have double the number of vocations they did before worldwide.
Right.
But here, just in the United States, 10 years, 2007, 2017, they went from 68 priests to 104. And from 48 parishes to 58 parishes. But here's what's happening in the parishes. They have more baptisms than funerals.
Right.
And most of their congregation are in their 40s with families.
Yeah, it's interesting because I guess that's, I know there are a lot of places across the country where those statistics sound unheard of. And that's a travesty. Where I'm at, like, we have way more baptisms. We have funerals. And
but
our demographic
rare.
Is 35. I know, it's weird.
You and have an awesome parish.
Yeah.
Mention again where that
is.
Well,
we're just a young community, too. Like St. Martha and Murrieta. I mean, but that's the demographic of our city is reflective of it.
Well, and also a lot of people kind of gravitate toward Murrieta. Temecula, it's more family-friendly area. Economically, it's more friendly for people to
absolutely.
Raise families. A lot of people commute from Temecula and Murrieta as well because they want that lifestyle.
Well, and I do wonder sometimes the statistics we see on aging populations in Catholic churches. A lot of our churches were built in urban areas where you've seen family flight, you know,
right.
And so families have flown. And so then you look at suburban parishes and it's a totally different story. I think the most encouraging thing about this stat is the vocations. That is you get 10 parish growth, you go, oh, whatever. But the vocation growth, you go, wow, that's substantial. You know, that is quite a lot of growth percentage-wise in vocations.
You know, it's really neat to see where there is growth in the church, because like you said, it is rare. But where I find it fascinating is the fact that they are seeing there's so much growth of young families. These are people who didn't grow up with a traditional Latin mass, right? These are people who grew up and often were born after the major changes to the liturgy, but they're discovering this reverence, this consistency, this harmony of the traditional Latin mass that they're gravitating toward. Now, at the same time, it was fascinating to me. I remember I traveled to Ohio last year, and there were so many young families and young babies in church cooing and well-behaved. I went, this is something I do not see in California. You might see the occasional child here and there. And yes, you do see children, but not at the level of young couples I was seeing in Ohio. There's something going on here in different regions.
You know, one of the things I found very interesting in this article we're looking at that was talking about this was they made reference to the fact that the pastors tend to give more robust sermons that explain teaching. And for me, that was like a gong, right? Because I feel there's such a disconnect in the way in which we communicate the faith. A lot of times, I think there's a lot of pressure on the secular priesthood to have everybody get along, to not offend anybody, right? Mm-hmm. And nobody wants people writing angry letters to their boss. And I think sometimes our priests have, and sometimes our diocese have gotten in the situation that when they do really just stand up for the truth of the faith and people write angry letters, that's not always encouraged in every diocese. And some wonderful diocese, some wonderful priests. But here in this, and again, they have a little more freedom. It's a smaller fraternity, right? But they're saying, no, the teaching is important. Personally, I think that any parish in the country, if you began to teach well what we believe as Catholics, I think you're going to see growth because the truth leads people want and desire the truth.
I think that is so true. I mean, even just this weekend, you know, you hear things such as being preached at the Trinitine Mass. What is mortal sin? You know, talking about mortal sin, about the fact that we can live in a state of grace, a grace-filled life. You know, the fact that they let us know, hey, there's a collection we have to take right now for the diocese, but one of these programs under the diocese is actually problematic that is financially being supported on human development issues with bioethics, abortion, etc. So they're saying, don't donate to this specific program. Wow, thank you for telling me, because guess what? I don't donate to a normal parish because I don't always know what that money is going toward when it's a universal fund.
Okay. This past Sunday, I'm thinking of like, it was the widow's mite, right? It was, she gave and it was a sacrificial giving. And how often do we then just get a really bland sort of, and we need to build this building sort of thing? No, we need to teach people about the nobility of living a life of faith, living a life that requires you to put your faith in God, not in your stuff. And if we teach that clearly, people rise to it and they go, wow, I've been called to something bigger than just, you know, volunteer to be part of this ministry or donate to support this building fund. Now I'm building the kingdom of God, right? Yeah. I'm giving God lordship over my finances. Gosh, we need to teach and proclaim the truth.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because they did have one of those building fund pleas at Mass a couple months ago. But here's what they said. When we took the Fraternity of St. Peter, took over this parish about 10 years ago, here are the number of people we had attending. It had like doubled or tripled since then.
Right.
And with young people, and they're saying, we're trying to run catechesis. They now have to move Mass times this year because there are so many young kids in catechesis. They need new buildings. They need more space for parking. Like, these are good problems to have. And this is something that I'm happy to see in the church. And maybe you're a Catholic, something to think about, and you're missing that teaching. You're missing the reverence. This is an option for you.
I like to contrast kind of what we see in the West, where you see this growth in the Tridentine Mass, the Latin, and then you look at the church in Africa exploding. And again, it's not necessarily Latin, but the teaching is so solid.
It's robust.
Right? I mean, you look at the African liturgy is a little bit different in its the way it's been encultured. The way they ran with Vatican II was very much the Mass is the Mass is the Mass. The teaching is the teaching is the teaching. They didn't get wishy-washy on those things at all. But the celebration, with the vibrancy of it, is beautiful. I feel like in the West, it's for some reason we got so wishy-washy in what we believe and what the Mass is and all of those things that you end up with this kind of Hallmark hotel art Mass. And once people see the Latin, the Tridentine, they go, gosh, this is beautiful. Yeah. right? And I think we can have that in the Novus Ordo, right? But we have to commit. You have to commit to what the Mass is.
Remember, you're going to Mass to be consumed, not to consume. I'm Timory Millington. You can find Chris Mueller at everydaycatholic.com and listen to his episodes on trending at radiotrending.com. Reach me on Twitter at Timory, and if you enjoyed the show, head over, send me a message at radiotrending.com.
This has been Trending with Timory. To learn more about Timory Millington, visit timory.com.